down to brass tacks. Father Paul, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here, yes.
Okay, the broader, apart from this whole question of being more involved, getting more young people involved in spreading the message to other youth via social media, and somebody pointed out that we've forgotten to mention that the Roman Catholic Mass is streamed on YouTube and that sort of thing, but we're talking about going beyond just that. You got to create... Yes. You know, create little packages and different methods of trying to reach younger people. But the broader question that we have here with respect to involvement of society, civil society, a greater degree of involvement in trying to shape Barbadian society, where do you see the church fitting into that?
The church fits into that realm by targeting families. A lot of the problems today, David, comes from the fact that we are, at the moment, the dysfunctional families are being allowed to impact on the society, and as a result of that, we're leaving out the most fundamental dimension to any society, which is the family. We're not addressing these issues.
But who's missing out? Who's missing that? You say we.
But our church. We take care only of our people. We take care of our members, and we're looking for more members, which we have to do. I wish I could get my church over. It's normally full. I would like to get it overpacked. But I'm saying here, David, that we take care of everybody. We're looking for all little enclaves, and we take care of those little and the wider society. We are not. I mean, how many of us? I want to take the opportunity to commend the promoters of Puff of Colors for promoting this show. I mean, I really mean that. And because when I saw it, I did not even hear. Ask my parishioners at Sacred Heart Church, they will tell you, and Rosary Church. I spoke about Puff of Colors at both, and I didn't speak negative. I didn't hear about the violence then. And I spoke positive. I thought this is a wonderful idea to gather up here to celebrate, to rejoice. Be good if they could take some time to worship as well, but okay, we did.
But you're going back. You've gone to Puff of Color, but
yes.
There's whole question of outreach to dysfunctional families. How could you do it in your church?
I can do number one. I need to be a little bit more creative and positive and involved in social media, especially social media. I'll have to stop preaching at people. And listening to them and praying with them, supporting them, encouraging.
What are the challenges associated with doing that, though? Because the very fact that you're not doing it now suggests there are challenges.
We're not doing it now effectively because we feel lost and swamped because we don't, and it seems to be a lot of finance involved in these things, and we don't have the money. That's one of our issues. But we can do something. That's why I'm glad that you're challenging me and you're challenging us, the church, at the moment, church members, because that's the issue, you know, David. We're not out there, and when we're out there, when we come out there, we're to condemn what's going on. That's why I'm hoping that the people who went to, I'm back to today, because that's a good starting off point, you know, the Puff of Color there, and that's why I go back to it each time. Because, for example, I need to commend those who had a good time and who contributed to the good time. And I need to let them know that was good. Thank you. That's how we can reach them, you know. And that's what I meant.
All right. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You on the air? Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Good afternoon.
How afternoon is the time?
Yes.
Now, I looked at the program you had on last night, and I thought it was a very interesting one, in that it was a remarkable program from the position of a memorable female as our first prime minister, and the election was rather resolved in terms of the Beijing mentality. It was very surgical. But what bothers me most of all, Mr. Ellis, is the fact that I looked and watched the news this last night, and I saw this situation happening in the cemetery. Now, I am 68 years old this year, and I started off my career as a policeman in 1959. I'd gone on and did several other different things in science and technology. But I was a member of the Barbados Ex-Police Association, which we formed in 1967. And we have an annual Park Festival, which the Police of Ontario takes no other application for that particular date than the Barbados X Police Association. On that day, when people are going to the park, they come from all over the place to go to that park. And the police make a point of, when the people approach the park, to stop and check for alcohol and other things. And we've been successful. So to the point where we don't have to apply for the park. It's reserved. And that is what I think is very remarkable about a place like Canada. I am a Canadian too. But what bothers me most of all, Mr. Ellis, is deterioration of the quality of good behavior in Barbados. And I've been back here now doing stuff. I worked for the hospital. I was a medical engineer. I went around and did stuff. But the quality of behavior and the deception that happens in all Barbados makes me worry. Now, I'm a man of my age, but I'm still a billion-dollar idea man. And to talk about giving your ideas to anyone in this Barbados tells me, Brown, you're taking a chance. Because there's deception, the court behaves that badly. The magistrate custody sergeant is one of the best persons that have analyzed the nature and makeup of this country of Barbados. It's rotten. It's getting stink. And I think that we have to get back and put two paces backward to understand that this country is falling apart. And it's falling apart. And it's not only falling apart when the villains are on the street. And I would hope that persons like yourself can stand up to the plate and say, if the next generation has got to survive in the country, which expects to bring tourists and big investments to this country, because we must really believe that the investors are not only white people who live in England and Europe. We have black people who live in England, Canada, and the United States are very wealthy. But they want to make certain that when they come to this country, that they have good justification for investing the money. We cannot always talk about black and slavery.
Yeah, but you need to get down to some specifics of how we are going to tackle the problem. You gave me a specific about how you in Canada essentially launch preemptive action to avoid things deteriorating in the way that would have happened on the occasion there. I mean, some people
may... the police work with us and they say that you have that part.
Some people may tell you that if we went in the direction of the breathalyzer testing, hence reducing the amount of alcohol that people took in at FETS, you could perhaps influence what happens in the aftermath of the FET. I don't know. Having said that, though, I don't know that we regularly have these scenes where people become so rowdy after FETS in Barbados, and there are many FETS. What we have had recently...
I know you don't have to have 1,000 incidences. You just have to have one.
Yeah.
And that one brings havoc and disgrace. It was a sad affair. Fortunately for us, we have cameras where people can take pictures. But without the cameras, you would not have believed that things have fallen apart so badly. And there was violent. There were women in the group who did stuff. I saw a woman kick a man. And the man fell down. He was young, too. But that in itself is extremely bad behavior.
Okay.
And then we have the violence. That when you wake up on a morning, particularly on the weekend, and you do not hear murder, you then say, well, at least we're still not in Jamaica.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. Down to brass tacks.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I want to make a contribution here. I have some points I want to make, but to do it, I call my contribution the national insurance tragedy. Right? You're talking about... Now, my first point, I have quite a number of them here. My first point has to do with... Now, as I understand it, the National Insurance Fund pays the non-contributory pensions, but should be refunded from government. I heard the former Prime Minister say that only recently. That was what the arrangement is. The question is, will these funds that were paid recently be refunded by the government? I would like to know that. Right? Now, as you know, many government entities never make their contributions, never pay their contributions to national insurance. Right? Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening to you.
And the third point is, government has used national insurance funds to finance the construction of quite a few buildings. And from what I understand, They should be, from which they should be earning rental income, but they never receive any. Two. Third point, my next point. Most of government national insurance funds are invested in government paper. And from what I could gather, it seems as though they don't ever receive all the interest as such. No. Pension funds, as I understand it, should be invested in high-quality investments of blue chip or gilt-edged status. And I'm sure I've seen cases where they've invested in high-risk, where pension funds should never be invested in. I've mentioned all that to say this. If national insurance funds were invested in as they should be invested, they should be able to pay the contributors an annual increase, right? And another thing that I noticed is that they stole off the... National insurance funds are to be invested.
Yeah.
And not to the investment income, right? Should pay an increase to the pensioners annually. That's ideally what if the funds were not, did not have all of these problems associated with it, that it could do that easily. But as you know, in recent years, they've not been able to pay an increase. I mean, they've, I 2 years ago, I believe they got something. This is my point. And of course, I noticed they have sold off some of the best investments they've had. For instance, Tom Adams bought 25% of the shares in Lighting Power. And I mean, that you know, if you're thinking of a blue chip, you could consider that a company of, whatever you call it in Barbados, blue chip status. So they sold the shares in that. So here we are. So and in Barbados, there are very few, thanks to the way the people have developed the country, there are very few opportunities for good investment.
That's only in Barbados?
Any country that is serious about its investment must create high quality equities, because that's where to make the best investment.
Yeah, that's a given. You must create it. With the problems that you face in these small economies, it is particularly challenging to find as much of that in these islands. What we need to be doing is what has been suggested already by Prime Minister Motley and others, which is that you need to look at trying to build the regional market.
I
understand, for instance, that Guyana is projected to grow at a very, very high rate by the World Bank and the multilateral agencies in a matter of years. So if that is the case, then you need to position yourself now to be able to work with Guyana and to build synergies. That is something which Barbados had been talking about before 2008. I suspect that is back on the front burner now, with the change in government.
Yesterday, in fact, a very good point I heard Ms. Motley in the interview we had yesterday. I heard it, I was very happy to hear her make the point that selling off government assets, you only get a one-off inflow. And what are you going to do next year? She said so yesterday. I was very happy to hear that coming from her, because the other leaders, like, they don't see that point. The other prime ministers we had, they just said, we need funds, so you sell off government assets. But she made that point before, and I was very happy to hear her make that point. And I'm happy to hear her talking about Barbadians investing, and I'm hopeful.
But if you were negotiating with nobody to try to ease the country's financial situation, then you were left with a situation where you had to sell what you get. You got to get what you want to prop up the foreign reserves, and that's where it came across, as she has seen it, as a one-off scenario, but unsustainable. It's not going to take you down the road.
But Ms. Ellis, if those guys, I don't know, but do you think that they come to a point really overnight and recognize that there was a problem with foreign reserves? You don't think years before they should be planning for all that?
I think they were planning in their own way.
All right, let me give you an example of something I read. The former Prime Minister of Singapore, Lee Kuan Yew, he in 1965, 1 year, anyhow, he found a situation where all his markets, they were selling many things on the mainland in Malaya. There was getting the Federation in Malaya, they had no markets, as he said. But I never heard him say he went to the IMF. I'm sorry. No, you never heard him say he was selling off the assets. You know what he said? He and a team of people sat down and did everything possible to sell to the imported world. Right?
Yes.
All I'm saying is that these
that's
guys,
what we have to do now.
Well, yeah, what I'm saying, yeah, I'm very sorry that Ms. Monty takes over Barbara's at this point, frankly, because it's a very bad thing to really prove anybody's worth.
So you would have preferred to... You would have preferred to leave it in Mr. Stewart's hands?
No. MC, I would prefer her to take over a good economy. Because I believe she could have been like Tom Adams.
Well, the truth of the matter is that you need what you consider to be good and strong leadership in difficult times. You hope that if they are successful in bringing you out of the difficulty, that the gains would not be squandered by another set of politicians or even by them, because there are examples of politicians in the region who have been like a cow that gives a good pail of milk and then licks it down, you know. What? So you don't want that. But right now, there seems to be a lot of goodwill going with the Ms. Motley and the Barbados Labour Party, and it is for them to use that goodwill wisely.
Don't you think if the country is in good state, that she'll be able to move us forward, really?
The problem with that is that sometimes when economies are in a good state, politicians waste the resources and people become complacent. I mean, you've seen it in places where countries have oil. And once they have oil and the price of oil is booming, money, they just lick it out. And when there is a bust now in the oil price, you move from boom to bust, then you have a completely different situation where all the other sectors of the economy are in trouble and nothing has been done to bring them to a competitive level. So being in a good state can sometimes breed complacency. And Barbados has been, in better times, Barbadians were pretty complacent. Those were the times when they used to go to Margarita and Puerto Rico and behave bad in people's shops. Don't forget those times, huh? This is down to brass tacks.
Hi. Good morning, David.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My call about is in connection with the eviction of the NSC tenants last week.
Yes.
When you read that article, how did that come across you?
But you tell me evicted, tell me what you thought.
Were they evicted through the court system, or were they evicted by NSC workers?
They changed the locks. I heard the story said that the locks were changed. And
right.
They implied that the locks were changed by the NAC.
Correct. So I am assuming that they weren't evicted through the court system, right?
Well, I would have assumed that, but of course, it may be dangerous to make that assumption, because it is quite possible that they could have gotten a court order to change the locks.
Okay, but from reading the article, I got the impression it wasn't like that. I could be wrong. But what I called about, because I'm a landlord myself, right? And I just want to know if a government agency is allowed to change its locks and lock out tenants, if that is done by a government agency before going through the court system, right? I believe we landlords should have the same right, because we landlords have to go through the court system. And a lot of these tenants also know how to use the court system, right, David? They tell you, well, you know, put me in court. That's the first thing they say, put me in court. Because the court system gives them another 3 or 4 months before they do evict them, right? So they can owe you 4, 5, 6 months in rent. And when you do, because they keep giving you the impression, oh, I leave in this, I'm leaving, but they never leave until you go through the court system.
Yeah.
That gives them another 3 or 4 months before they evict it. And when they do go to court, they can tell the magistrate, you know, I am not working, I don't have a job, and, you know, I can't afford to pay the rent. But in the meantime, David, they have cell phones, they have big flat screen TV, they have all these things.
It sounds, you've had a pretty frustrating run with it, right?
Yes, I have. I have been through the court system already, and I know what it is, right? And the tenants know how to use the court system, I'm telling you. But I just want to know, if a government agency can do it, we as landlords should have the right to do it too. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. We're going to the Starcom Network News.
Oh.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Yeah, you can hear me, Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Now, if you had a bag of onions and one were bad, what would you do?
I'd take out the bad one.
Why we are not doing that with bullies at school?
I don't know that yet.
I come in right down.
Now you tell
me. No, we don't do that. We don't do that. And that's why you still have the problem. All problems are going to stay the same way unless we do something about it. And one of the things I recognize is that Barbadians are the greatest talkers on the planet. That's all we ever do. And we talk and talk and nothing happens. Now, you would believe, Mr. Ellis, and I'm glad I'm speaking to you because you always strike me like a person that is fair, sincere, and honest. I'm glad I'm speaking to you, not like some other horse. Anyway.
So, wait.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be careful, you know. They ain't got too many of them.
Well, okay.
Put me here now.
Okay,
me,
I understand.
Make me get sued.
Mr. Ellis. Okay.
Well, fortunately, you said not like other horse, generally. Thank you for that.
Right. Mr. Ellis, please, listen to me. You could believe that we are talking about all these diseases that the other day here is that we are gone epidemic with obesity. Could you believe, Mr. Ellis, that we, and nobody can tell me that I'm telling a lie, I went and investigated in every school, but most of them. We are giving the children, and I know that it done this year will just go as a normal talk, and nothing is going to be done. And that's why we have all the problems, because we're simply not doing anything about it. We are talking about it because we are the greatest talkers in the world. Just how Muhammad Ali was the greatest boxer and Pele was the greatest thing, and that's why
Muhammad Ali was a talker too, you know.
Yeah, but he used to do what he said. That's the difference about him. When he can beat a fella in round two, he would win. So that's why you had to admire the gentleman. Now, you would believe, Mr. Ellis, that around the schools in Barbados, we are giving children sugar and salt 3 times a day. And there is nobody in Barbados can tell me that I am telling lies. Because I am telling lies, I can give you the proof. Go and look for yourself.
Okay,
every school are giving the children sugar and salt. And when I say sugar and salt, Mr. Ellis, I mean the Conkers, the nuts, the this, and the parents buying it for them too.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's a valid concern. Yeah, we really need to be paying a bit more attention to the diet of the children. I thought that some time ago, the Ministry of Education had put out some directive on that. But you know how these things go. You start and then you stop. Let's take another call. Hello? Down to brass tacks. You're on the air.
Hi, Miss Alice.
Hi, how are you?
Good, and I hope you're good too.
I am heartened by the number of women who call this program today. I think today is one of the days that the women appear to me to have outnumbered the men.
That happens sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Good interview.
Thank you.
And I called to talk about two items.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to two young men already and that were marijuana, and they tell me they started in school. So we got to check that out.
Marijuana?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
So who's to do it though? I mean, we have to. That's what we say, we have to. But then, specifically, how do we? I mean, I think, you know, you look at schools are a combination of those who are there and those who used to be. Teachers and students. A lot of the schools, and especially in these difficult economic times, they also need a lot of support, not just from government, because the government can't do it all. The PTAs, it needs that from the former students and that sort of thing. And in terms of the question of intervention, you know, the intervention is required. The intervention is required at different levels. So what can you do, for instance, when you say we? Is it possible?
I see this as part of the ongoing discipline among our boys and now the girls too.
Yes, that's true. But that was a long time in coming. That sense of indiscipline has been there for quite some time. It just gets progressively worse.
Right, because
everybody, many people believe that, you know, you can do it and get away. If you can do it and get away, why not?
One more thing I want to know if there's a vast difference between the contributory pension and the non-contributory pension, because if there's not, I don't see the fuss if the non-contributory is getting a little more.
I think it's a difference of $10 or so.
So what is the fuss?
Well, you know, there's some people who feel that once they contributed, they contributed with the understanding that they would always be better off than the person who didn't contribute, and that they would be markedly better off. So some of these people are saying, you know what? The government is in danger of encouraging people to believe that you don't have to contribute, because if you don't contribute, the difference between what you get and what the other person gets is so small that you could as well be in their position. So in all of this, I think there is merit in saying you've got to watch that differential, because you don't want to discourage people from contributing. So you understand? You understand what the concern is there?
I hear it.
Mm-hmm.
But seeing these things are so tough and everything, I remember that people contribute every time they buy something, to taxes or whatever.
That's true. But the person who has been part of the contributory pension scheme has also been paying taxes. Mm. He has also been doing all those other things that the other guy has been doing.
Some people are born
to contribute and some are not.
Some people are born with a lot of intelligence. Some people never could get a job that would pay them enough. Some people have a big pension, some people have a small one. And I don't see anything with the little extra money that the people are getting there, you
know. Okay. Thank you very much for your contribution. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Concerning these pensions, it's not a matter of $10 more or whatever. I will let you all to understand, right, that the non-contributory pensions are now $225 weekly. The contributory, the minimum has gone to $235,
yes,
which is a difference of $10, yes. But there are people like me who is receiving a pension, which is a survivor's pension, and both categories are now getting more than me because I was not at the 190 minimum, and my pension was over the 190 minimum, but has not attracted anything at all. So now I am still getting what I was getting before, and these persons, both categories, getting more than me. So it's not just a $10, and I'm not an isolated case, because I know other persons who, one for sure, is getting survivors, has not moved. And her family, who is receiving non-contributory, is getting far more than her. So this needs to be revised. This is not just a matter of a $10. So a person who don't know can't just come and say it's a matter of a $10. It is far more than that there. It's far more than that.
So you move this now from just a battle between non-contributory and contributory to include survivors' benefit too?
Well, yes. We have not received a cent. I have not received any money because my non-contributory was over the 190 that the Prime Minister has stated.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that amount that when they get their increase of how much it is, no? is $45 yeah. more per week. I am being swamped.
Swamp hole.
That they're getting far more than I am. For my survivors.
But it surprises me that you would throw survivor's benefit into this equation.
Pension is pension, Mr. Ellis.
Okay.
And if you are going to give one an increase, I would dare say that everybody should get an increase. If you're going to increase
But
them,
it seems as though you get both a non-contributory pension and a survivor's benefit?
No, sir, you don't ever get that because I get a survivor's benefit.
Yes.
Right? But although I have worked and paid my national insurance all of my life, yeah. I cannot get a survivor's and mine or mine and part of what is a survivor's. No, yeah. It's either or.
Either or.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Either or.
So in
either
the circumstances or. Where it's either or, you argue that you should
exactly.
see this in the same way as if it were a non-contributory pension and it should also be increased.
Or a contributory pension.
Or a contributory pension.
Yes,
either
right.
or. It should
yes.
be seen in that light and therefore you feel disadvantaged because
yes.
that has not been taken into consideration.
I am. Mm-hmm. I am.
Gotcha.
And when I get my water bill at the end of the month, I still got to pay the $150 per day like anybody else who get a raise.
Okay.
Huh? I still have to. I heard you tell the lady this morning to call the national insurance. I did since last week. I called them back twice since then.
Okay.
But they're supposed to get back to me, but I don't know how much they can get back to me because they are not the ones who implemented this here. This probably has to go ahead on them, but I am not the only one. The lady who spoke this morning, she's not the only one.
But let me put to you this particular part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That in all these circumstances, you're going to still, you cannot please everybody at the same time.
I agree with you, David.
And the country is in a situation right now where it is very difficult. It has already stretched it a bit.
David, I agree with all of what you're saying.
Okay.
But David, I contributed to the National Insurance Scheme in Barbados. I was told to contribute so that when I get to the age of pension, I would be able to live comfortable. They haven't had like that all the time, right?
Yes.
I agree with that. Don't wait until you want it to look for it. I did it. My husband did it. Unfortunately, he has passed on. I can only get the higher of the two amounts.
Right?
I can't get both. So therefore, if I have to settle for what they give me, which is the higher of the two amounts, even if it's a dollar more, I expect to be paid an increase just like everybody else, who...
But you just told me that you understand the dilemma that the country faces at the same time.
But David,
yes.
I understand the dilemma I face too, because when the bills come in here, I ain't got no more husband to help me. I got to depend on the money that they give me.
You know that they got some people on welfare as well, who can make the same argument. There are other people who are, you know, in circumstances where they too could do with an increase. But the question
David,
is, can we do it all now at
no,
one time?
No, David, I understand what you are saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you, my argument is, I was told to pay national insurance so that when my time come for my benefit, I will benefit from it. I understand all of that. And I am saying, if you give the ones at the lower end, you get the ones at the lower end, you know. So therefore, what has happened now is the ones at the lower end has come and bypassed some of us who were above the lower end, but not in the category where they don't feel it like we do.
And so I needed to check page 25. Somebody pointed out page 25 of the mini budget on the question of survivors and invalidity benefits. So I need to check on that for you and to come back perhaps tomorrow, get somebody to follow up on it so that you will be able to get some clarity on exactly what has been said on it. For now, I want to thank you all for being part of today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. A special thanks to Dennis Johnson. And I certainly hope that you have a really great afternoon. I'm David Ellis.